Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
Hey, Don Williams here with today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. I have an unbelievably good guest today. I have Justin Breen. Justin is the founder and CEO of a global PR firm, BR Epic, an exclusive community platform of the BR Epic Network. He's got a new book titled Epic Life, and it features a foreword by none other than Dr. Peter Diamandis. Number one overall book for sales on Amazon Kindle, recently made the Wall Street Journal and the USA Today bestseller list. And that ain't easy, my man. Justin, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I was listening to your interview with Preston Brown earlier today. Such a great interview. Trailer park, going to country club to shower because it was cheaper, and then creates massive companies. I mean, that's entrepreneur life in a nutshell. So I'm really excited to talk to you. And then Wooshak, go away.
Yeah, I love that. And who was it? Napoleon Hill, I think, who said, oak lives in the acorn. And certainly the mighty oak in Preston's life started out in that trailer park. That's awesome. So I want to take you all the way back to little Justin. So like 5 to 18 years old in your childhood in the home or homes where you were raised. And I want to know, was there an entrepreneurial example for you in your childhood home?
Yeah, it's a good question, because what Preston said, his Mensa dad was interesting. And it's interesting that you ask age 5, because I think that's when the brain starts to kind of form and then you can like actually remember things. So that's a good question. So you're either born someone like this or you're not. I strongly am convinced about that. And I was just born to be this person. But the first chapter in Epic Life is the cream rises to the top. And that's something my dad said every day that he was alive that I can remember. So that was age 5 to 13. He died when I was 13.
So sorry.
Oh, thank you. I'll explain with that how unusual it is. But he was 61 when I was born. So he'd be 107 now. And he was a World War II hero, shot down multiple times in combat, many times without a parachute, and he got back in the plane. So that's my litmus test. You're either someone who can do that, or you're someone who makes an excuse. So I don't understand excuses, that it's illogical to me. So yeah, every day that he was alive that I can recall, he would just say the cream rises to the top. So we just partner with the cream that rises to the top, or those that'll get back into a plane without a parachute after another one's been shot down.
Yeah, I love that. And aside from his military history, was he an entrepreneur?
So my dad became an attorney in Nuremberg trials, president of an insurance company. One of my earliest childhood memories, my dad's best friend was assassinated in a famous gang shooting. If you saw the movie Casino, my dad's best friend was the person who was played by Alan King, the guy who shot in the parking lot. So I write about this in the book as well, that my dad, I remember it a little bit, but my dad was like the clean guy in the organization. So if you want to call that entrepreneur, which I actually would, I think a mafia is a very well-run entrepreneurial organization. I don't necessarily agree with the ramifications of not doing a good job, but it is an excellent entrepreneurial organization. And so one of my first memories is my dad saying, hey, my friend was shot. We have to hide, because he tried to hide us at some friends' houses. So I remember a little of that. But yes, he was very, very entrepreneurial, for sure.
Okay, awesome. So what about this? And sometimes a person's first paid gig as a child was entrepreneurial. They had a lemonade stand, or they were—
those are my children.
Shoveling snow or whatever. And sometimes it was a job. But what's the first commercial activity you did? What's the first thing you did where you traded time, effort, energy, brain power for dollars?
I've done hundreds of interviews. No one's ever asked me that. That's such a really interesting question. Most of the people I talk to, most of them, if not all of them, started their entrepreneurial journey, as you said, in their— even before they were 10. I saw where you— I think you were 19 and you were like top salesperson in the company at 19. So I have a different type journey. So first company, which I guess is a PR firm, I was a journalist for 20 years and created an entire company based on how PR firms annoyed me for 20 years. So I actually don't know what PR firms do. They just bothered me. And that I started that 6 days after turning 40, after my job salary was cut in half as a journalist, February 10th, 2017. So 2 months before I turned 40. So the first entrepreneurial thing I actually did was when starting first company. And the first check that actually said Brepik, oh man, that would have been like May of 2017. It was for $500. And so happy to get that check.
Wow, that's amazing. One of my previous guests, Shahar Aris, Israeli entrepreneur, he too did not begin his entrepreneurial journey until he was in his 40s and highly educated, MBA, Stanford guy, a lot of 20 years at HP or something, but didn't start till his 40s, went from startup to $100 million exit in 30 months. And part of that he masterminded.
That's a full unicorn. Wow, that's a full unicorn.
And part of that was just God or the universe giving him some really good cards. But he was smart enough to play him well. And so very interesting to me. You are one of two, about 150 interviews now, that started, I wouldn't even say that late. I would encourage anybody in the audience, no matter what your age is, come to the light, drop the W-2, and go do something for yourself. It's never too late. Okay, so we're still back with young Justin, 5 to 18, your dad tragically passed away when you were an adolescent. When you graduated high school, you went on, you followed his footsteps in the military, well, across Europe, great. You went to university. What did you do?
Great question. So I did apply to be in the Marines, which would have been good, but I wound up getting a full academic scholarship to University of Illinois. It was called the Illinois War Veterans Memorial Scholarship. So you had to have a parent or an uncle who had served in either, at the time, it was World War II, Korea, or Vietnam. And then you had to have a very high ACT score. So I was very fortunate to win that scholarship. And then so I'm like, I can't turn down a full. We could have paid for college regardless, but I'm like, I can't turn down a full academic scholarship to a Big Ten school. So I wound up going to University of Illinois and then majoring in journalism. And that's a big reason why I never became an entrepreneur until turning 40, because I just, you don't go into journalism for employee account revenue, office space. You do it because of purpose and that's what you're meant to do. So I mean, I did that and still do it. I've done it most of my life. So I love doing it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so for journalism, does that mean you were a reporter, a writer?
Yeah. So people like us are usually aliens within our own family, community, and verticals. The only people who understand us are top entrepreneurs on planet. And so when I was a journalist, it turns out I was actually an entrepreneur who happened to be a journalist. So like I never understood for journalists who were like writing about negative news or if it bleeds, it leads or political news. Like I don't understand or ever pay any attention to that. I was always writing about and connecting cool people, changing the world. And that's what we do all day now.
Yeah, you just needed a little more time to bake before you could emerge from the oven and start your entrepreneurial journey. So tell me about, is it Brepik?
Yes.
Okay, so Brepik, and I apologize for mispronouncing earlier. So global brand, and you service like what type of clients?
Great question. So I'm 100% simplifier, meaning my brain takes all this blah, 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 and simplifies it into patterns. I don't know why my brain does that, but that's what it does. So we only partner with visionaries who live in abundance and who look at things as investments, not costs. So not business owners, not consultants, not humans, just pure visionaries. There's no scarcity mindset. There's no what do you cost or charge. There's only what is an investment would you look like. So there's been nothing outbound or sales or any marketing gimmicks in years. It just create value for visionaries. And then they introduce me to awesome people. So it's a lot of fun being in that space all the time. And then if you're not a litmus test for people you serve, you're a hypocrite. So the purpose of my life is to be a connecting superhero for every visionary who shares their stories with the world. So I am a visionary sharing my story with the world. It's just, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we have a mutual, I think we actually met virtually, but through a mutual friend, Mike Koenigs.
He's a pure visionary, dresses better than I do. Well, and it's interesting because Mike and I could not be more different in terms of outward appearance. and flash. He loves using the word sizzle. And I like this gray shirt. I wear this shirt or one just like it 5 to 7 times a week. And this hat, which has the dog chewing out of it, I wear it every day. So like, I just like, and then I'm at home. Mike travels the world and stuff. And I'm at home with our 2 sons and my wife most of the time. I'm sorry, dogs, but it's like, that's a perfect example right on cue. But Mike and I have the same mindset. We have the same abundance, visionary investment mindset. He's a full visionary, fully lives in abundance, and he fully looks at things as investments, not costs. So basically, all my companies, all our companies are hundreds, if not thousands, of mics introducing each other. It's really fun.
That is really fun. Hard to imagine. In fact, I think I may have commented, I want to be like Mike.
You did.
Yeah. And kind of stealing on the Jordan jingle, but truly almost without peer on the planet.
Mike? No, there's only one Mike.
Yeah.
But I think that's the point. Like, I don't understand conformity at all. It makes no sense to me. So for whatever it's worth, literally 1 to 2 times a day, people tell me, they're like, oh, I've never met anyone like you before. I've never talked to anyone like you. I'm like, well, that's the point. And it's just embracing your uniqueness. And Mike certainly does that. You definitely do that. And you just realize you weren't a conformist in human society. So you just created your own world, which is smart.
Absolutely. You couldn't hurt my feelings any more than saying, hey, you're just average. That would just crush me.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because Mike and I, where the picture came from of him with the shoes. So we were at Abundance 360, Peter Diamandis's event. Mike was average at that. That was an average human at that event. Like, it was 400 mics, which is amazing, horrifying, incredible, outstanding, transformational. But like, that was the average person there, which is, I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. So thinking back, okay, in your entrepreneurial journey, can you think of a hard lesson, something that occurred?
One?
Well, you can pick one. Something that occurred that at the time is like, ah, man, that hurts, that burns, that stings. I do not like it. But maybe after some time elapsed, you looked back and you said, hey, now that I have the perspective of time, actually, it was probably a positive for me, but it really did hurt at the time.
Well, okay. So I appreciate you asking that. Again, my brain turns everything into patterns. Okay. So this is what separates entrepreneurs from humans, consultants, business owners. I have not met one person like us, and I'm not talking about Silver Spoon. I'm talking about true entrepreneur that started something from nothing. I've not met one of those people that hasn't overcome at least one of the following 4 things. Almost everyone I talk to now is 3s and 4s, and most of those are all 4s. So these are the 4 things that separate entrepreneurs from humans. 1 is bankruptcy or potential bankruptcy. 2, depression. 3, the highest level of anxiety that you can imagine. And 4, likely and or possible traumatic experiences as a child or young adult. So for humans, business owners, consultants, those are excuses. For entrepreneur, that's what entrepreneur life. So I'm 3 of those 4. The only thing I haven't had to worry about is bankruptcy or potential bankruptcy, but 3 of those 4. And I think the biggest lesson with those 4 things that I learned in 6+ years of being an entrepreneur was, at the end of 2018, I'd made more money in 1 year than I'd ever thought possible, because that's not why you go into journalism. And I'd never been more miserable in my life. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So at the time, it was very painful, very, very painful. But I'm glad I went through it, because I learned that more money doesn't equal more happiness.
Boy, that is truth. To me, it's kind of just a magnifier. If you are grateful and joyous, you will be more grateful and more joyous with more money. But if you are anxious and depressed and fearful, more money will just make you more anxious, more depressed, and more fearful. It just magnifies what you do. It's not the be all end all, but it does mean you can go better places and stay longer. And so for the normal entrepreneur, it's come and go a couple of times in a career. It's not, non-entrepreneurs think it's all just that straight line. But it's not. Almost every entrepreneur's had their toes dangling in the abyss, looking out over their toes. Yeah. And so I have several friends that are former U.S. military special forces. And when you listen to them recount SEALs, Marine Recon, or, you know, the training that buds, all that they go through, it becomes pretty evident that the soldiers and sailors and Marines that achieve that level, they're the people who won't quit.
Never.
That's the common denominator. They're not the biggest. They're not the strongest. They're not the toughest. They just will not quit. And entrepreneurs have a similar gene.
That's somewhere. Correct. So what entrepreneurs are, they're the most damaged people with the best coping skills. The most depression, most anxiety, most trauma, most potential bankruptcy, but they have the highest IQ, the highest EQ, the most hustle. And again, my litmus test is, that was your first question. Like, my father was shot down multiple times in combat, many times without a parachute. I wrote a diary from the Battle of the Hurricane Forest towards the end of World War II, very deadly battle. And so I found that after he died, and every day gets more and more horrific. And that's entrepreneur life. You can either do that or you can't. And I just don't understand people that would quit. Like, that makes no sense to me. That's the real, I don't even use the failure word, even though I just did, but that's the real failure, is quitting. That's the only way to fail.
Yeah. So many people from the outside view failing, quote unquote, as the opposite of success, when in fact it's a necessary component.
Those four things, I was talking to him, it was super interesting because I brought those four things up. Because what happens is people talk about, hey, I got a car, or the revenue's up. And then so I talked to them about the four things. And almost always now they're like, check, 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 or check, 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 or check, 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 check. So they're like, and then they start talking about who they really are. You know what I mean? Like, what the behind the success is this. Those four things. But then I was talking to one of Africa's top entrepreneurs who's made and lost millions, like, if not billions. And he's like, he took it a step further. He's like, you actually have to go through those four things. You have to go through all four, which I don't necessarily agree with, but he was adamant about it. And he's like, that's how you transform from pride to purpose. This is him saying that the only way to transform from pride to purpose is going through all four. I thought that was really interesting.
I think that is very interesting. And I love what you said about the person that you really are, because I've known this about myself, and I think it's true of humanity, is that most people are two people. They're the person who's out in front of the curtain, the onstage person, the person they want the world to think they are. And then there's the other person, the real person who's behind the curtain, okay, who knows things that they don't share, tell. Yeah. Demonstrate. And I know the real magic for me happened, and Mike Koenigs gets some credit for this, but the real magic for me happened when I poked my face through the curtain and stepped to the front, and that person who had been front stage went, they just vanished. And I encourage my clients to step through the curtain into who you really are.
100%. You're being a litmus test for the people you serve. That's logical. The ones that are not being litmus tests for the people they serve, or they're doing something that isn't the same thing for the people they're trying to help, like, that's pointless. How can you help people if you're not helping yourself first or being an example as yourself? Like, it's illogical, completely illogical.
Yeah, you cannot pour into other people if you are empty.
It makes no sense. Like, you are a logical person, and I'm guessing a lot of that is learned. And so what happens is you talk to people like this, whether it's recorded or not. I mean, the only difference between this conversation and most of mine during the day is this one's just recorded. But when you just talk to people like you or Mike or Preston, like, over and over, then you just see the patterns and things. And the ones that are, quote unquote, successful, they're litmus tests for the people they serve. They're doing the same thing for themselves first. And like I'll give you an example, like what my brain does with the pattern. So I just keep making bigger investments to be in smaller rooms, but the people in those rooms are making bigger impacts. Okay, so it's the same formula. Bigger investment, smaller room, bigger impact. That allows me to spend biggest investment in smallest room, which is my family, where I can make the most impact. So it's the same formula. Bigger investment, smaller room, bigger impact. How can you ask people to make bigger investments in you or your company if you are not personally making bigger investments to be in smaller rooms. Like, it's illogical. You can't ask people to make bigger investments in you or your companies if you personally are not making bigger investments in others or other groups. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so let's talk about PR for a minute.
You know as much of it as I do. I was just annoyed. We'll talk about it.
All I know is I know a fella in Dallas who was like a 25-year television reporter.
Yeah.
Jeff Crilly. Right? Yeah. Jeff Crilly, super guy. But all I know about PR, I learned from him. And he kind of like you said, hey, I don't know that much. You know, his core skill was he could get a story. He could meet a deadline. And he said, that's really important in that world. But give us something that our listener could say, man, I got something I know about public relations.
So, okay, sure. I'm happy to do that.
Thank you.
So at the highest level, there is no competition, only collaboration. And then the formula for creating a successful global company is surprisingly simple, is you see a problem, create solution, problem solve. Successful global company.
That's really simple, but that's worth saying one more time, Justin.
Yeah, I'll say it again. Sometimes I talk fast. So you see a problem, create solution, problem solve, successful global company. So all I hear from all these visionaries is they saw a problem, a gap, a loophole. They created a solution. They actually did it. Mm-hmm. They solved it. Successful global company. And then I hear the same problem. We're tired of being best secret. We want to be in more news media. It's usually at a global level to create validity and credibility. If you want to call that PR, that's fine. people like us to people like us, and then they share their stories. But so I was a journalist for 20 years, created an entire company, first company based on how PR firms annoyed. Saw a problem, created a solution. And then my company's solution is it's on the website. There's no tricks or gimmicks. Like literally anyone could take it, but anyone at the highest level would never do this themselves. They would just find the best people to do it. So I'll give you that's the flying the plane here. I'll even land the plane, which I don't like.
Land the plane.
I'm going to do it. So again, company's entire process is on the website. There are no tricks, no gimmicks. I literally have no idea what PR firms do because it's never on their website. And so was annoyed for 20 years, receiving hundreds of press releases every single day from people I don't know. That's a problem. So all my firm does is it writes stories similar to what did as a journalist. It becomes a link on the partner's website under news or blog. So it looked like a story that you see in the Dallas Morning News or whatever. It doesn't matter. Take that link, pitch it to media all over the world. Media is interested because of years and years of trusted relationships. They want to do story and then introduce partner to media. And then they do the inner problem solve, successful global company. So it's works for any company, any location. The only vertical we completely ignore is politics because it's the opposite of visionary abundance investment mindset. And we
just it is the opposite.
Well, it is. It's not that I don't like it, but it's argue instead of action. It's cost instead of investment. So I just ignore it completely. Any great entrepreneur would completely ignore politics anyway because you're going to get stuff done regardless of who's in charge. So yeah, I mean, partners all over the world, all verticals, all company sizes, that's immaterial. We just only partner with visionaries. That's it.
Love that. Okay. So we're coming into the home stretch. I can see the checkered flag out in front of us, but I'm going to ask you the tough question now. Okay.
Looking for the flag.
It's there. So put you in a time machine, send you back to talk to 20-year-old Justin.
Yeah.
You get a couple minutes to share with Justin something you know you wish he knew then that would have sped or eased your journey somewhat. So put you in the time machine, send you back. What do you tell your 20-year-old self?
There's only one thing. I mean, that one, I wouldn't have changed anything because I guess the only thing, I mean, I'm glad this didn't happen, but I guess I would have taken one entrepreneurial class in college taught by an actual entrepreneur, but I'm kind of glad, like I still don't know what an S-corp is because I think that's funny to actually not learn what that is, but I didn't know you had taxes 4 times a year. Like I didn't know any of that stuff, but it was great because started with a foundation of things that I never cared about anyway. And I could just focus as much as I could on purpose, which is what I did as a journalist. And now it's just exponentially grown that. But I guess it would have been nice to know what entrepreneur world even was, because I had no idea this world even existed until starting it. So it's been fun.
I love that. When I started my first company a long time ago now, I did not know what a P&L was.
I have no idea what that is. What is a P&L? No idea.
Your profit and loss statement. I had no idea. And so for our listeners, don't let what you don't know intimidate you. Start ugly. Start where you're at. Do what you can. Take the next step. That's how you do it.
I'll even double down on that because what you said is very important. Very important. So there are things that a child or a monkey can do that I cannot do. So like holding a pencil is very hard for me. Tying shoes or putting on my children's bike helmet, very difficult. I can do it, but it's really hard. A puzzle, I'll walk away from a puzzle. But in terms of like connecting people on global level and getting them in media, like not only is that fun and I'm good at it, but I love it. Like I never get tired of it. So like I just stay in my zone of genius, unique ability, which is a strategic coach term, or MTP, moonshot. And then I just hire other people to do the stuff I don't want to do, or I just don't do it. And so if someone like me who has basically no other skills besides, like seriously, I'm a good dad, great dad, decent husband, and then I'm good at this, but really no other skills, but I just know what I'm good at and what I like to do. So that's the key, regardless of what business you're in. Like that's the key, is just doing what you like to do and what you're good at.
That is a key. You know, there was a book on leadership came out a couple of years ago, The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And it talks about everybody has a zone of incompetence, competence, excellence, and magnificence.
Yes.
Even when you use that word, most people withdraw a little bit. They're like, oh, that's a big word. That's a heavy word.
Those are humans.
I don't know that I do anything magnificently. And I'm like, oh, I assure you.
Guaranteed.
You do. And kind of the interesting slant they had was this, is that zone of excellence where you do things that better than most people in the world is a dangerous temptress. Because as opposed to your zone of magnificence, your zone of excellence, there's little to no risk. You know you're very good at that. And the zone of magnificence is, well, Brene Brown would say, you're swinging in the wind. You're totally vulnerable and you don't know what's going to happen. You can't control the outcome. And so that's where you literally can be your best. And I can remember speaking, one of my first speaking engagements was with Mike Koenigs and walking out on the stage. And there was, I don't know, 300 or 400 people in the room, and the full lights and the monitor and all that. And I felt like I froze for a minute. Like I walked out there, I couldn't find anything to say. And I just stood there like a big cow for a whole minute and didn't say anything. And what was interesting was this, after I came off the stage and I'm fortunate enough that people come up and want to talk to me, which is nice and also means they're customers, by the way. But a good friend of mine, which that's nice. Nice people are nice and customers are nice too. And a good friend of mine, she was complimenting me. And I'm like, but what about that minute where I froze? And she looked at me and she said, what are you talking about? And so when I went back and watched the video,
yes,
I did freeze.
Yes.
For about a second.
Wow. And it slowed down that much for you.
But I think that is what I would compare it to is the person who's in a car wreck. And they said, I could see the car coming. I could see their facial expression. It's like it got real slow. And of course, it didn't get real slow. I think the phenomena there is your brain gets real fast.
Okay. So there's two. One, that's interesting. Two, I could picture Wooshock standing in front of the crowd, standing like that, frozen. That would be interesting to see. As I'm like a child. But three, so there's two times that I feel like what you just described. Two times. One is if I'm driving, I like having a fast car because it helps me focus. So one, if I'm driving a car over 130 miles an hour. My car will not allow me to go much faster than that. They put some type of restrictor plate in it, which is kind of annoying, but total focus. And then the second time was skydiving, free falling through the air. It couldn't have been more than 10 seconds of free falling, but it felt pure calmness, pure focus.
So, you know, we may be brothers from other mothers.
100%.
I love gravity. And so roller coasters, double black diamond, ski slopes, cars, trucks. Yeah. I love gravity and I love to feel it in volume and intensity and then crazy things. I'm actually going to be in Africa for 3.5 weeks here in a couple of weeks.
Nice.
And yeah, I'm blessed. I'm fortunate and grateful. But somebody asked me, are you going to swim with the great whites? And I'm like,
and?
Well, yeah. I mean, how could you say no to that?
That's my five-year goal is literally, we have a vision board upstairs. But one of the five-year goals is to swim with great white sharks. So I wrote that a year ago.
I think I'm going to do mine from the cage, but still I'm going.
Oh, definitely do it with the cage. Yeah, there's, No. Okay, so our sons are 8 and 10. So this is, my wife's a pediatrician. So think the opposite of us, like rules, order, love. And, okay. So then my advice, this is how I parent my children. This is not a joke. It's going to sound like a joke, but I'm being serious. So silly, okay, stupid, not. So swimming with a great white sharks in a cage is silly. Without a cage, that's just stupid. And then the other advice I have for them is misdemeanor, okay, felony, not okay. And then my wife's like, you know, go to school and learn.
Well, and my boys are both grown, but when they entered high school, I can remember telling them, now look, this can be a really pleasant time and it also can be a brutally unpleasant time, but it's temporary. And once you're out of high school, you'll be out 3 months. It'll feel like you're out 3 years. And so the big goal is this, you're going to make some mistakes. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's all right. Don't make the big mistakes.
Right.
Don't get dead. Don't get pregnant. Don't get addicted. Don't
100%.
Get, I mean, there's a couple like don't gets, but other than that, life is about learning. And so I was fortunate to raise independent, strong children. And so fortunate.
Yes. And that's the best part of being an entrepreneur. There's not even a close second, but the best part by far, again, there's nothing even in the same ballpark, but by far the best part is the kids get to see this world even exists, and then they can do whatever they want with it. But most people, they don't know it even exists. They're not even aware of it. So my kids, whatever they want to do is fine, but I'm just glad they have this foundation of understanding the truly global nature of our world and how fast things are coming, and then, you know, why it's so important to connect with the right people, and then not being afraid to take risks. And you know, so it's just a wonderful thing to give them this foundation. That's what I'm most grateful for by far.
Hey, I want to highlight something you said. You said, I just see patterns.
Yes.
So right now we live in the crazy world of what everybody's referring to as AI. And kind of my personal slant on AI, and we use several tools for several specific purposes. Mm-hmm. And I love that. But to me, the machine is not actually intelligent. The machine has processed unbelievable amounts of data in a supercomputer and is able to recognize patterns far beyond what a human can do.
Yes.
And so when you do a prompt with ChatGPT or any of the others that are out there, basically it's performing what a Google search bar would do, except on steroids. It's looking at much more data. And then because it has some language processing laid on it, it's able to appear to talk to you. But it's not really. Ultimately, what's happening is the data has been turned into numbers. Your prompt gets turned into numbers. The computer, the processing power, does pattern recognition, just exactly what Justin does. He recognizes patterns. It takes the numbers that it gives you and translate them back into words. But I think it's a very valuable skill for a human
100%.
To recognize patterns, because what we forget is this. Every 100 years, you get all new people. Institutional knowledge goes forward kind of at a snail's pace, because every 100 years, you get new people. It is so helpful to recognize patterns. Oh.
Can I give you two good ones?
Please.
So my favorite one is right mindset attracts right network, which creates right opportunities. So right mindset attracts right network. And then wrong mindset attracts wrong network and creates no opportunity. Yeah, and visionaries who live in abundance and look at things as investment cycles. So that's the right mindset, which attracts right networks and creates right opportunities. Okay, so I found all this other stuff kind of takes care of itself. So that's one. And then two, I'm 100% simplifier, meaning, again, everything is a pattern. So, and then just came back from Abundance 360, which is the top AI futuristic. I mean, like literally any who's who of anything was at that in terms of technology. Okay, so that's great. Thankful for that. There are two things that will never change, too. Never. They will never change. This has been proven every 100 years, every 1,000 years, One is the power of real human relationships, okay? Real human relationships. Two, power of storytelling. So hieroglyphics, smoke signals, Bible, Constitution, whatever that, we're a world of storytelling. AI is great, but But all AI to me is it will create better human relationships and better storytelling.
I love that. Okay, Jess, so how can our listeners reach you? How can we support you? Is there anything I can do for you? Three questions in one. How do we reach you? What's the easiest way to get in contact with you?
One, this is a tremendous interview. I sent you the Colby, so I'm really looking forward to seeing your score.
Okay.
How it compares to mine.
I hope it's good.
Well, you're definitely a high. You have to be at least an 8 quick start. I'm going to guess you're a 5.382. That would be my.
I'm writing it down to see if you are right.
5.382 guess. Mike is like a 3.295. A maniac is compliment for me. He's a full maniac. And then I'm 8.671, which is, you'll never meet another 8.671. I've never met one. The main site, there's one reason why I'm saying it, but it's brepicllc.com. And then there's a mindset scorecard survey. It takes 5 minutes. It's through the strategic coach platform. But what I found is people qualify or disqualify themselves with their own mindset. So, and people really like taking it. So that's on the site, brepicllc.com.
Okay. That's how we reach you. Is there anything the Proven Entrepreneur Army can do for you?
I mean, it would be interesting for everyone to take their Colby. I have no interest in Colby other than it's the only thing I write down before I meet someone is their name and their Colby score. Because
I'm going to take it today. And
of course, you're a high quick start. Yeah, if your audience wants to take it, we only partner with visionaries. So almost always, there are exceptions, but almost always I'm actually an exception, but a true visionary is usually 8, 9, or 10 quick start. I'm a 7, but almost always a true visionary is 8, 9, or 10 quick start with lower follow.
I love all of the assessments. And I can remember the first time I did Myers-Briggs, mm-hmm. I was contemplating going into partnership with a gentleman and he wanted me to take it. And mm-hmm. so when it came back INTJ, which there's not a whole lot of us out there, he was like, it's wrong. There's no way you are an introvert. And I was like, oh.
You're an ambivert.
Well, yeah, I can do the extrovert thing, but I charge my batteries and I refuel alone.
Me too.
And so I can do the extrovert thing better than a lot of extroverts, but only for a while.
You're an ambivert. If you're around people like us, you're an extrovert. But if you put me around regular humans, I'm the biggest introvert. You could put a lampshade on my head. I'm useless. And then my wife says, she says 3 words to me before parent-teacher conference. Don't say anything. So I don't say anything. I just stare at the thing, and the teacher's like, do you have anything else to add? And then I just shake my head. Not allowed to talk.
Yeah. It's really funny. My wife sometimes says, please be good.
Please be good. Right. So usually people like us, again, I see patterns. So not always, but usually people like us marry stabilizing humans. So I always like people like us. I go, oh, so is your spouse a teacher, a social worker, an engineer, a lawyer? My wife's a pediatrician. And they're like, how did you know that? I go, well, imagine marrying yourself. That would be a bad idea. I mean, it'd be horrible. But it does happen. So occasionally, a visionary will marry a visionary. So one of two things happens with that. One, it's the greatest life of all time, endless adventure, swimming with great white sharks, no cages, attacking the great white sharks whatever. And you're both going for it, right? More often than not, it's a complete disaster because there's no stabilization. Multiple divorces, kids yeah, that's why people like us marry stabilizing humans. What does your wife do? What is her?
My wife is an artist. She's an artist.
What's her degree in?
Her degree is in fashion design, which is art, but she's a painter. And so most people, very common for somebody to say, you know, she's just joyful. And I'm like, you know, it's she kind, is loving. Joyful. You know?
And then people meet us, right? Like, you're very kind. But like, I used to have all these parties and stuff pre-COVID, and I'll start doing it again. But like, my wife's like super kind and loving and warm and like extroverted, like really pretty. And then I'm just like, and it's fine. But people get very confused. This doesn't make any sense. I'm like, well, it makes perfect sense. Now my wife takes more chances in life. I'm sure your wife does too. And then she's made you a human, kind of. Like, just barely.
She certainly makes me far better.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. I'm just a better human unit with my wife. I just
That's hilarious. You got like a 155 IQ person like you and 140s genius. So you're way above that, obviously. And that's not a compliment. That's just true. And then you're like, I'm a better human unit because of my human wife. And she's like, what are you talking about? She's like, you know, just stop there.
She knows when to ignore me.
Yeah. My wife she's like, how do you talk like that all day? I go, this is how I communicate. And then by people as numbers, like that's how I see people as numbers, literally. So she's like, you have to stop doing that. I go, well, that's how I see the world. So that's fun because, you know, then some of that rubs off on them, right? And then they're like, oh, well, let's go swim with sharks.
Yeah, exactly. I have so enjoyed our time together.
It is hilarious. Congrats on marrying a human, by the way. Good job.
Yes. And I want to encourage our listeners to be better human units. It's in your power. You can do it. It's not that hard. You just have to want to. Okay. Right. That's the first step. Just want to. So it's been a fun day today. Justin, thank you so much. I'm so grateful.
Oh, me too, man. You're great. I love it. I love it, man.
Thank you. And that's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur Show. See you next time.
That's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur. Go to ProvenEntrepreneurShow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.